Chapter 13. Compounding. Whenever spiritual logic obsoletes old conclusions about the nature of Creator and creation, a world of brighter conclusions is ready to emerge. In the progression of human thought, our acceptance of a world of brighter conclusions is followed by a set of new questions. At each level, thought is turned, if only briefly, to satisfy logic and consistency to the world of appearances, to develop a sufficient explanation for whatever sense of the negative might remain. Evil, appearing to human sense, goes from a first recognition of it as untoward material phenomena to a last human appearance in level 4 belief as spiritually mental empty space. One reading these last few chapters could conclude that infinite evil is an inconceivably wonderful abstraction that can make us all feel safe and warm because we know about all the bad things that can never happen to us. Well, if this idea of infinite evil is so wonderful, what is the explanation for all the obviously rotten things that may go on in our world? Things we might call evils. One could suggest that apparent evils on the human scene are like so many balls of tangled string. When confronting a hopelessly tangled ball of string, it is sometimes a surprise to be able to pull the string carefully and patiently until all the tangles disappear. One could sometimes unravel an entire tangled ball of string and find no knots. If there were no knots in the string, how could it have looked so hopeless? Even with no knots at all, if you do not pull on the string, if you yank too hard, or if your string pulling is not done with intelligent sensitivity, you can still have a tangled snarl. Knots or no knots, if your string looks tangled, you have to work it out. In chemistry, there are mixtures and compounds. A mixture is like salt and pepper poured together. They're together in physical proximity, but they can be separated through simple means. A compound, on the other hand, is like the salt itself. Salt is a compound made of sodium and chloride atoms joined in a chemical bond. When a compound is created, it has characteristics and properties that may be far different from the properties of the original materials. When you have money in a savings bank, the value of your money can increase over a period of time due to compounding of interest. This compounding is a form of fractional self-multiplication. If left compounding for long enough, your money can double or even triple in value. If a bone is broken, it can be a simple fracture or a compound fracture. A compound fracture is where not only the bone breaks, but the broken bone breaks through the skin. It is a bad situation gone worse. If you are working on a project and you make a mistake, you can correct the mistake or you can ignore it. A mistake may often be quickly and easily corrected if it is detected early. For instance, if an engineer is thinking about a design for a bridge and he makes a simple math error in his head, he can detect that error and correct it even before writing the incorrect conclusion on paper. If the engineer does not detect his error, he may commit it to paper. This will compound the error. The consequences of making a mental mistake are not so much related to the enormity of the mistake as to whether the error is corrected before it is compounded. The most monumental mental error we could possibly imagine would cause no problems if it was corrected before it was compounded. In the case of the bridge engineer with the math error, were his mistake to go uncorrected for several months, its correction might require the redoing of countless calculations, or scores of drawings, or the generation of volumes of change orders for materials purchases. Were such an error to go uncorrected during construction, and if its consequences were not observable during final inspection, the error might be detected only after the bridge collapsed, carrying rush hour traffic during a storm. By the time this mathematical mistake, an abstraction, is detected at the level of full manifestation, it is too late to correct it. At this point, correcting the error by building a new bridge is an insufficient remedy. A simple error can compound, and its consequences can compound, and the cost to correct it can compound. As errors compound, certain resulting losses can appear seemingly irreversible. There are some errors that are not related to other events, errors upon which no other things are dependent, and they tend not to compound. An incorrect spelling on the memorial plaque on the new bridge might be an error that would not compound. The reason compounding is mentioned here is to suggest there is no point in taking infinite words that are inconceivable and turning them into human beliefs that are frightening. If instead of thinking correctly from spiritual principles, one merely supposes and assumes and believes, one could become involved in an unfortunate compounding process. As with the bridge, the consequences depend on what mistakes are left uncorrected, how we carry them into action, and what their position is in the chain of events leading to causation. If we live by flawed assumptions and act on them, if we energize negative beliefs and exert our will in wrong directions, we may have a case of taking nothing at all and compounding it into serious problems. Our abstract awareness that compounded nothingness can never be more than nothing might be comforting, but the one who does not correct the arithmetic problem in his head is not absolved when the bridge collapses by saying it was only a silly mistake and he knew the right answer all along. Culpability may not be so much in making the mistake as in letting it compound. We know that the only right sense of evil comes from the infinite idea of it as abstract nothingness, already filled with goodness. The infinite idea of evil does not exist alone. It exists in an infinite compound with the idea of infinite goodness. The compound they form is the whole idea of infinity, an idea whose union is greater than the sum of the parts, an idea experienced as sensible and supersensible wholeness. To lend one's mental weight to a human sense of evil, to energize thought or action based on a limited sense of evil as finity, mentality, belief, law, or substance, might begin to compound an easily correctable error. Since infinity is true identity, compounding at other levels than the infinite might lead to aberrant and undesirable beliefs of identity. To the degree that the ideas providing impetus for our thoughts and actions are in harmony with the infinite idea, the resulting beliefs will be proportionately free from unwanted side effects. If one attempts to employ mental action with bad seed, it will eventually come to nothing. Worship of the negative always comes to nothing. The form that any compounded aspect of human nothingness might present during their resolution into abstract nothingness can range from the monstrously horrible to the laughably ridiculous. If we experience beliefs from incorrect compounding, they will tend to have a mental aspect consistent with our individual level of perspective. We may be able to take some very good human ideas and compound them into wonderful things. This will be possible to the degree that our actions, beliefs, and principles reflect their infinite originals. The process of finitely compounding evil might go through a progression from finite concepts to material misconceptions, to fears and doubts, to wrong actions. These might appear to result in human limitations, material discords, evil adversaries, painful punishments, or worse. As always, the infinite idea about everything is the ultimate antidote. Just as the infinite idea of evil provides us with the not knowing needed to preclude sensible evils, the antidote to fear of false compounding is appreciating the infinite idea about it. Compounding an infinite idea of evil defines a larger sense of place within which to conceive the infinite idea of good. Compounding the idea of infinity compounds holiness. Compounding holiness is infinite identity compounding itself. It is the natural activity of infinitely minded being. The right sense of compounding as infinite spiritual activity can help correct, replace, displace, and dispel any false or limited sense of it. A most powerful standpoint for the infinitely minded thinker is to consciously and affirmatively be. At the standpoint of the infinite I, simply being results in right compounding, wholeness, and revelation. There's a footnote at the end of this chapter. I've mentioned a few times that, as we progress, we sometimes need to come up with new explanations for the negative as it passes through discrete phases of becoming more remote. Compounding was what I came up with 30 years ago, but it's not my thought about it now. That would be in my audio update, MP3, on the wholeness of the infinite God principle on my website. End of footnote. Chapter 14. Nonsense. I remember the day I first clearly understood some basic spiritual ideas I'd been thinking about for a few years. This came out of a discussion with someone who gave me good answers for my hard questions. After getting what seemed like a good answer for my standard hard question, asking how the universe could be both infinite and material, we got on to other things. As our discussion went on, I tentatively accepted the explanation that the real substance of the universe is not matter, which one physicist described as nothing moving swiftly. For some reason, I then grasped the idea that spiritual love is the actual substance of reality. Not only did I understand the words, but I saw them. I sensed their actuality. In an earlier chapter, we discussed the idea that spiritual seeing is believing. Well, it was for me. Ever after that day, it has always been clear to me that no matter what things look like, love, spirit, is the only real substance. In this same discussion in my youth, I understood that it followed as a consequence of logic that if spirit is real, then the opposite of spirit is not. My next question dealt with origins. I asked the obvious question. If matter and material error are unreal, where did this unreality come from? The answer was simple. If matter is not substance, if it is unreal, then it is not here. If it is not here, then it makes no sense to ask where it comes from. It didn't come from anywhere. The answer was obtained by making the question go away. In a sense, this was a ridiculous answer. There was something absurd about it. The answer had followed as a logical consequence of our conclusions, but in a certain way, in trying to reconcile it to my familiar senses, it made no sense at all. It only fit perfectly with a sense of holy spiritual logic. This conclusion was at once completely logical, and in another way, it was absurd. Being a teenager at the time, I decided it must be the right answer. I loved it. The acceptance of those conclusions was vital to my having a solid foundation in what has been here called level 3 beliefs. There's a footnote here. This experience is included in my spiritual memoir and also available in an audio MP3 as Spiritual Experiences Case 2, found on my website. End of footnote. I will refrain from elaborating on those ideas because they're not my subject. It's just an example. The example is appropriate to the subject of nonsense. Looking back on this experience, I have always attributed my acceptance of those concepts not only to my grasping the substantiality of spiritual love, but also to an appreciation, a delight, an affection for an idea that in a funny way made no sense at all. I liked the nonsense aspect of it, as well as the logical part. Understanding those spiritual concepts was very important for me, and the beliefs that grew out of them served me well for years. But the reason I mention this at all is to bring up the important subject of nonsense. Just as certain ideas are sensible, they make sense to us, so some ideas are nonsense. They make no sense at all. That is good, because there are some ideas we would like to have become sensible to us, so we can sense them, and others that we would like to have become nonsense, so we may have no sense of them whatever. This is not simply a play on the word sensible. When we are thinking thoughts that make sense to us, we are led to generate beliefs we tend to live by. When spiritual ideas make sense to us, they become our things. We possess them and experience them. Spiritual sense becomes our actual sense. Spiritual reality becomes our stuff. When, on the other hand, certain thoughts become, to our reflected spiritual understanding, so ridiculous as to be completely and fundamentally unbelievable, they can no longer enter our lives. Spiritual sense makes nonsense of material discord. Infinite sense makes nonsense of human limitation. Our new sense obsoletes our old sense and makes it nonsense. Some evils on the human scene are so extreme that we actually describe them as being unbelievable or inconceivable. Some outrageous evils we even call mindless, senseless, or meaningless acts. Our terminology in such cases stems from our subliminal yet intuitive sense that these are cases of evil drawing close to its essence. Our human concepts of the unbelievable and senseless need to be elevated to that which is infinitely unbelievable and infinitely senseless. Then we will no longer believe in things humanly senseless, and our untoward sense of them will fade away. Consider what it would mean for the activity of infinite love to so permeate human consciousness that cruelty and inhumanity became to the peoples of the world utter nonsense. What would happen if our knowledge of spiritual wholeness so improved our beliefs that human disease and impairment became laughably ridiculous? or if we became so imbued with the affluence of infinite spirit that the idea of human impoverishment became actually absurd. I'm not suggesting that we should see humor in the sufferings of humanity, or that anything is to be gained by us all becoming comedians. But there is no reason why we cannot become so filled with the knowledge of the infinite idea that untoward things will be rightly regarded as nonsense, and then they will be gone. And that is nonsense. To be comfortable thinking about the infinite, really thinking about it, you have to have some tolerance or maybe even affection for aspects of nonsense, for some things absurd. Most every aspect of infinity contrasts with human thinking in ways that involve nonsense. The infinite idea of evil is inconceivable nonsense. Infinite good is sensible. Infinite evil is nonsense. Infinite wholeness is the totality of the infinite I am and the infinite I am not. Infinite sense in infinite nonsense. One infinite I. Realizing that the basis of untoward things is nonsense at its essence gives us a unique standpoint from which to work things out. In working for good and vanquishing evil, our work should have a certain no-nonsense quality to it. Understanding the infinite principles involved makes it easier to work things out. Our earlier discussion of spiritual causation focused on the four levels of human belief related to rational spiritual action. The analysis was intentionally dismissive of what was termed level zero, the pre-rational level of human belief. At level zero, there were three categories described: accidental, indifferent, and mystical. There's a fourth category that puts the irrational levels in some symmetry with the rational levels. It is an agnostic condition stemming from the premise that we are basically without a clue. All these four have something to be said for them, but not as human beliefs, because each of these viewpoints has an undifferentiated character to it, that is, because good and evil cannot be reliably separated, each is rightly apprehended only as being infinite. If you're going to cherish and exalt notions of the natural or supernatural, of mystery, ritual, and ceremony, let them all be infinite. In mathematics, there are real and imaginary numbers, and they are both important. Decimals can be rational or irrational. An irrational decimal is one that, without ever repeating itself, goes on and on forever. The spiritual principle behind this is very important. But let all our irrationality be infinite. Let all our nonsense be infinite. To put our mental weight on a human sense of these things is to engage ourselves in beliefs at a level where we cannot affect the goodness of their outcome. Chapter 15, Signs of Progress. Infinity is revelatory in nature. It is always unfolding to itself new aspects of its infinite idea. This characteristic of infinity is the driving force for all true progress on the human scene. Having gained some appreciation for the idea of infinity, it is reasonable for each of us to be cultivating larger expressions and expectations of spiritual goodness in our lives. As we work out the infinite problem of being in everyday life, however, appearances are not always interpreted as a source of continuous happiness. We may experience ups and downs, periods of progress and what might feel like stagnation or even regression. This sense can be traced to the notion that spiritual reality sometimes reveals itself to us in seasons. Human concepts relating to seasons derive from the infinite idea about seasons. As with any finite concept of an infinite idea, finite concepts about seasons include aspects of limitation. The following observations about seasons are not about the infinite idea or ideal, but about things we see and feel, about our beliefs, about our human sense of things. It is important to recognize familiar aspects of the seasons that relate to spiritual progress. If we can interpret the seasons correctly, we can better determine what to do and when. We would not expect a farmer to be successful if he could not tell the difference between spring, summer, fall, and winter. It is helpful for one toiling in spiritual fields to be able to recognize mental seasons. When considering seasons from the standpoint of the farmer, it is clear that there is a time to plant. If you do not plant seeds, no crops come up. It works the same way in the spiritual realm. When the time is right, it is important to prepare soil, to plant seeds, to think, to plant infinite words, to stand for things, to show forth better beliefs, and to act them out. Planting is very important, but one need not be planting all the time. One might find such satisfaction in the planting process as to feel it necessary to be planting continuously. This is not the way to do it. When the seeds have been planted and all the ground has been covered, the planting season may be over. The season that follows planting time is the summer. During the summer, one should keep one's fields weeded and watered and free of pests. Then one should play or go to the beach or go camping. At the right time, play can be an important part of spiritual progress. It can release light-hearted expressions of creativity, and it is sometimes a needed manifestation that we are unafraid. After summer comes the fall. Having planted and weeded and watered, there will be a harvest to take up. It is good to take up and enjoy the harvest. If one is planting straight through summer, when it comes time for harvest, that one may just keep on planting. One cannot take up the harvest while hell-bent on planting. If one is not going to harvest and enjoy, what's the point of planting? As with the tendency of some to plant continuously, so there's a school of thought that holds out for continuous harvesting. That doesn't work either. If one does not plant and tries to harvest, that one may at first harvest wild crops or the fruits of others. After a while, however, those who keep harvesting without planting will start to harvest dirt. That is all there will be in their fields. One of the most noteworthy phenomena of the seasons comes in the fall after the harvest has been gathered and the leaves have begun to drop. The falling of leaves represents a crumbling process where the old gives way to make place for the new. In the spiritually mental realm, the dawning of new ideas makes old beliefs crumble. In the late fall, when crumbling is in full swing, it is not hard to become depressed or even discouraged. If we were enjoying the planting and harvesting process, and now, all of a sudden, all we see is barrenness. When all our fruits have been harvested, we sometimes want to keep on harvesting because it gives us such a tangible sense of well-being. Because crumbling may follow right after the harvest, things can start to look pretty bleak, just when we had thought they were going so well. When we see that we can no longer harvest, the first instinct is to start planting again. plant, plant, plant. But now, that does not work either. It does not even feel like the seeds are getting into the soil. No wonder. The ground is frozen like a rock. It is winter. It may come as a shock, having been successful sowing and harvesting in the spiritual realm, when we suddenly come to a lull where nothing seems to work anymore. When that time comes, recognize that it is winter and stop trying to plant and harvest. You are not a failure. You have your harvest to carry you through. Relax. Get a hot cup of something and sit by the fire. Even if it's the fire of your old beliefs going up in smoke. Do something that brings you joy. Rest assured that springtime follows the snow. Some earlier chapters discussed conception and elimination, and how the infinite idea drives the conception of good and the elimination of evil. The linkage between conception and elimination brings up an important subject that you should know about. This topic has been addressed elsewhere as purification, although there may be more to it than just that. In any case, you should be able to recognize the process. If you think about this book much, you will doubtless have the opportunity to experience it. When it happens, and when it is not seen for what it is, it can be disturbing, and it could tempt you to become discouraged. If you apply heat to a pot of molten ore, gold, silver, lead, you name it, several things will happen. The ore will continue to melt and liquefy. Impurities will rise to the surface, and the ore itself will become progressively more refined. One's reflection of infinite truth as their mentality acts the same way. In the case of your own thought, impurities are like little bubbles of empty space that surface, so they can be seen as nothing and be relegated to infinite empty space. If your perception of empty space is compounded at some lower level of belief, you may see these little bubbles of nothingness as terrible little somethings, or they could surface as terrible little nothings. In any case, they will eventually claim to be you, your thought, your identity, yourself. When you encounter these and they appear to be part of your own mentality and character, you may start to feel unworthy and inadequate. You may see bad things claiming to be you. At this point, even if you've really been pouring the heat on and progressing well, you might stop and, notwithstanding your efforts and progress, start to feel like you are really an awful and utterly unredeemable person. This is normal, and it's a good sign. It's an interesting process. Thinking at the level of infinity reveals the elements of good and the nothingness of evil, and these two are reconciled. The key to dealing with the process of purification is to continue to identify yourself correctly. Keep on with your progressive spiritual thinking. The impetus that brings impurities to the surface will ultimately cause them to be eliminated, to vaporize, to vanish. Poof! When you persevere through and master these experiences, you will come away from them with a new and larger sense of wholeness. If you are reaching from the infinite idea, from level 4 beliefs, you may get to see the most awful things surfacing and claiming to be you, some very bad words. When you see of what you are capable, just let it be infinite. If you are to be awful, simply be infinitely awful and get on with it. If you are working with spiritual truths, and all of a sudden everything looks like it's turning to mush, keep on letting the truth unfold itself to you. Sometimes the only way to get through a stage of progress is to pass through seasons of crumbling or the process of purification. It is always easier and more pleasant when you recognize it for what it is. Chapter 16, Conclusion. Identity determines who and what things are. In the sequence of creativity, identity is at or near the very beginning. It may even be before the beginning. Identity determines the nature of the thing to be conceived. It may be the ultimate abstraction you can reach for before it is born in idea. In the world of the real, the infinity of good is true identity. It is yours and mine. It is I. The oneness of every good thing is inherent in your spiritual identity. The manifest idea of true infinite identity is you. It is us. At the level of infinite abstractions, the whole of identity is more than simply what the I am is. Infinite identity also includes the specific identification of what I am not. From the viewpoint of a finite sense of identity, I'm not my opposite. From the viewpoint of infinite identity, I am my infinite opposite. The I declares itself to be infinite holiness and infinite unholiness, fit together as one. It has a transfinite voice that declares, I infinitely am, and one that says, I infinitely am not. If you think about these things and get a wisp of meaning, that is doing well. Accepting my opposite as part of infinite identity, I can show forth an affirmative negative, a sweet nothing. The infinite opposite of the light we seek is infinite darkness, already filled with light. You can listen to the voice that says, I am infinite darkness, I'm infinite nonsense, I'm all the infinite expletives, I'm redeeming every dark word. To proceed here, you need to stay connected to your source. Love your enemies, and let them all be infinite. The identity of infinite goodness speaks as the divine spark in you and says, I am that I am. Infinite identity says, I am the infinite love that I am. The I am and the I am not constitute the wholeness of the infinite holy I. That is yours. That is ours. This I is true identity. It is timeless, collective, individual, universal identity. It could be said to be the infinite I, but even that might be modifying it, in a sense limiting it. The ultimate I may be infinite and finite, fit together in perfect harmony. True identity is holy. It is an unholy hell. It is infinitely righteous and infinitely unrighteous, infinitely simple and infinitely complex, infinitely clean and infinitely unclean. It is its infinite affirmation, declaration, and assertion. It is its infinite denial, contradiction, and opposition. Let all these be infinite. The I is an ongoing revelation of the wholeness of infinity. It is going on forever. It makes perfect sense. It is nonsense. It is one. The part that gives us pause is that we cannot steer this mind with our own. When we know enough about it and are ready to trust it, we can let go and let it be ours. I. True identity is the infinite whole and infinite whole, fit together as an ever larger whole. whole. 1. Forever defining a perfectly safe place and time for itself. Invisible identity and abstract opportunity, parent, the infinite idea. This child is a cross between the infinite I am and the infinite I am not. It is a lovely cross, and its name is wonderful. It's a little terror. It's not a human cross, but an infinite cross, an infinite idea conceived from the holy identity of the infinite I. We reach for the capital I, not the little I. I, that is the word. We know what it means. Having ascended to the highest peak, we can sense both the rarefied atmosphere and the granite beneath our feet. Now at our highest point, we do a pirouette. Perhaps this peak is only the tip of the iceberg. In time, we must go back down and put our vision to work. But we know where the peak is, and we can always stand here to see it all fit together. If you try this, remember the two great commandments. Reaching into abstractions of infinite identity, we avail ourselves of thoughts that make up the whole. From the standpoint of the I, invisible substance and form are one, and we can begin to see the wholeness of the infinite idea. The infinite idea is first assimilated within as pure information. It is a message from our infinite identity about our infinite identity. This I looks for our worshipful adoration. It looks for us to seek it as the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. It looks for us to reach out for its wisdom, to fall before it in humble submission, to take its name and identity and authority and prerogatives as our own, to use it as our very ego and will and mind and being, to be triumphant, to be one. Having completed the process of differentiating evil from good, separating it from ourselves, and realizing its nothingness, we are ready to find a bigger sense of wholeness. We have rejected evil until it faded into empty space. It has been dissociated from our mental world. While any sense of evil still appears in our beliefs as empty space, we bring out that it is already filled with the idea of infinite goodness. When we hear its name, we let it be infinite and integrate it, but not as something. Now we relish letting infinite goodness make sweet nothingness of evil to provide a place for our conception. When thinking about infinity in the first person, a more integrated sense of things begins to appear. Because of infinity, there are not two contending or separate halves representing the knowledge of good and evil. The infinite words that bring your renewal and the sweet comforting silence that welcomes them are not two halves that were parted. It started as one, and that is how it's speaking to you. There's no isolated idea of good and separate idea of evil, even if evil is nothing but empty space. Infinity mandates that all things exist as one, that all be reconcilable to each other and to itself. The idea of infinity inspires a new dynamic in our spiritual growth. As our identity and sense of the infinite grows larger, the empty space it fills grows larger too. The more is learned about the infinity of good, the more is brought to light of the infinity of evil. Not a sense of it is real, but a sense of it is nothingness, as opportunity, and ultimately as a sweetly inconceivable abstraction. The idea of infinity presents the knowledge of infinite good and evil as one, with the recognition of the supersensible wholeness of that one. This union is filled with light and is defiant of human limitations. The progression from undifferentiated observation to final integration appears to form a complete cycle. If we were to picture such a process symbolically, it might look like something happening slowly in pond water seen under a microscope. Perhaps this cycle illustrates human spiritual evolution over the last thousands of years, or the spiritual growth of a single individual, or of a single cell. It may be a process ever taking place on the frontiers of revelation as new aspects of the infinite idea dawn in thought, as sort of spiritually mental metabolism. It's a pattern beginning and ending with wholeness. It goes from wholeness to differentiation and self-division, to separation from within, to disassociation and exclusion, and finally to reconciliation and integration, forming a new sense of wholeness. Maybe this goes on forever. Having risen to the heights of infinite abstractions, we now find the need to come back down to earth, so to speak. Knowledge of the infinite oneness of things provides a new and better standpoint from which to work things out. Dealing with opposites of goodness at the highest level equips us to practice more effectively the four types of spiritual action, handling things as they appear. Having worked out the problem of good and evil at its essence, we are now ready to apply our conclusions, gradually and gracefully, to the issues of everyday life. We can hold thoughts of pure infinite goodness and love as consciousness, without subtle fear of contradiction. We know about contradiction and denial and all those things. When they appear, we will simply let them be infinite, embody them, and let them vanish from consciousness. Having new insight into the ultimate nature of all dark things, we can analyze and antidote them, gain the perspective to face human problems confidently, and work out their solutions in practical ways. Returning to our familiar levels of spiritual action, we can now find them somewhat supercharged. The spiritual being, knowing, faith, and discipline that prepared us for our high destination now welcome us back from the mountaintop and give us human comforts and human hands. Our distinctions about the levels in which human beliefs stratify give us a preliminary structure for understanding the spiritually mental realm. Familiarity with the words and conceptions that comprise our spiritual ideals helps us sort out thoughts and choose the best. The idea of infinity solves the problem of good and evil, resulting in a new idea of wholeness. An understanding of spiritual issues begins to blossom as we exercise our thoughts from a spiritual principle, and it continues with thinking and being from the standpoint of infinite identity. Earlier levels of spiritual action are still important. They are best worked out by individuals doing their own thinking and identifying themselves correctly. Using this process, spiritually or infinitely minded thinking can regenerate all our thoughts and beliefs. Reaching out to a spiritual principle or to the pure word of infinite identity enables us to begin this process. Because the world of transcendent thought could appear disconnected from the rest of the world, it's especially important that the thinker, pondering spiritual and infinite things, stay connected to reality and to common sense, even as they are transformed. Our best thinking needs to be applied to regenerate our beliefs about the world. Only in the real world is the process completed. This is the place where infinite spiritual energies transfigure our beliefs and actions. Participating in the world provides us with experiences that are food for thought and help us make new room for spiritual progress. Although this book might seem to be mostly about thinking, thinking is not a solitary end in itself. It's just the beginning. At the point of infinity, thinking and living are one. One cannot be thinking fully if not living fully, and one cannot be living fully if not thinking fully. To work the thinking process in seclusion, to conclude that one could thrive in an atmosphere of dreamy isolation or contemplative musing, does the process an injustice and stagnates. Knowledge of infinite ideas, more than any other level of spiritual action, requires our involvement in the issues of life. The process that begins with radical infinite spiritual thinking naturally results in fully involved living. We can continue to find new connections between our best thinking and the ways we live day to day. The individual thinker can determine how best to do this. There's no need for anyone to prescribe human courses of action for the spiritually motivated thinker who is listening for the infinite word and watching for the infinite idea. Rules for living are best the outcome of sound beliefs, and beliefs are most progressive when they are freshly generated from within rather than obtained secondhand. It is not always easy to maintain a progressive spiritual thought life together with a life of full worldly involvement. These two spheres sometimes seem to conflict. They may sometimes seem irreconcilable, but they can and must be reconciled. We must keep them connected. Keeping one's thinking and living connected sometimes takes work. It takes energy. It costs self. The energy required to maintain the connection between thinking and living is love. The range of our loving establishes the bounds of our conception. Infinite love is forever extending itself, ever more fully showing forth its nature as infinity. Love embraces the whole of thought and experience, and love provides for the natural union of opposites in a harmonious one. Identifying with the infinite I solves the ultimate problem. It is the ultimate relationship. It reveals the integration of thinking, loving, and living into one whole, infinitely minded being. It reconciles opposites into an infinite holy one. Infinity reveals itself to us as our identity. It unfolds itself to us as our source. It is our infinite, forever, I. This is the end of the book.